The protection of God's creation and the promotion of peace were at the heart of Pope Benedict's address on Monday to diplomats accredited to the Holy See, and his words have been hailed by many of the ambassadors present as an insightful and important endorsement of their work. In a wide-ranging speech, which we reported on in detail on yesterday's programme, the Pope spoke of the many problems connected to environmental destruction, from food shortages to conflicts over scarce resources, or desertification and natural disasters causing people to flee from their homelands. He called for a change of attitudes in solidarity with those most in need, promoted through education and a stronger dialogue between church and society.
La question doit être affrontée dans le cadre d'un grand effort d'éducation afin de promouvoir un changement effectif des mentalités. Et d'établir de nouveaux modes de vie.
Immediately following this annual meeting in the Vatican, my colleague Charles Collins spoke with Britain's ambassador to the Holy See, Francis Campbell, to hear his reactions to the Pope's words.
What struck me today was just the breadth of what the Holy Father said. He touched on very substantially on the environment. He touched on disarmament. He touched on different parts of the world where peace has prevailed, or at least diplomacy has worked. He touched on the place of religion and society. And it really was a very good mix of both the practical and the theoretical.
He spoke about the environment. Of course, this was the theme of his World Day of Peace message. The message itself was released around the Copenhagen meeting. A lot of people think that that meeting did not achieve as much as it could have. The Holy Father said he has hopes for meetings that are supposed to take place later this year. Do you think that progress can be made on this issue?
I think progress can be made, and the Pope, I think, highlighted in particular the hopes held out for the meetings later this year in Bonn and in Mexico City. And certainly the United Kingdom had a very ambitious programme going into Copenhagen. I think we would have liked to have seen a treaty that was binding. That couldn't be achieved because of the necessary consensus wasn't there. But these two meetings, as the Pope points out, in Mexico City and in Bonn, offer another chance. And there's a very clear statement in what the Pope said today. And if I can, I will quote him. He said, "I share the growing concern caused by economic and political resistance to combating the degradation of the environment." And that's a very, very clear call by the Holy Father for progress on the environment, on the need to tackle climate change. And if there's one theme permeating his message today to the diplomats representing 178 countries of the world, it is that he keeps returning time and time again and linking climate change to issues of conflict prevention, to issues of conflict for scarce resources, etc., etc. The message on the climate, the message on the environment is really there throughout everything that he is saying.
Of course, Copenhagen came in the midst of one of the largest economic crises this world has seen since the Depression. Combating climate change is an expensive task. Is it something that will actually be passed? Is it something that can overcome the political resistance when the world is in such economic turmoil?
One of the aspects at Copenhagen was actually the whole concept of solidarity with the developing world, and the need for the developed world to help the developing world with tangible funding. And indeed, there were proposals, and there are proposals. Firstly, funding of $10 billion per year up to 2012, agreeing on a fast start programme. The second being that that would rise to $100 billion of climate finance per year by 2020. Now, you are right to say that the economic climate is not the ideal climate that one would want to go into in relation to Copenhagen. But actually, there is a willingness on the part of the developed world, and you can see that in relation to the package put forward by the European Union, how far the United States moved, etc., etc. And I think, again, Mexico City and Bonn will offer further opportunities to look at that again.
Changing tacks a little bit here, the Pope also made mention of the Lisbon Treaty, which came into force just a month or so ago. He mentioned with gratitude that the Lisbon Treaty has a provision to have an official dialogue with the churches. The Union itself will have an official dialogue with the churches, which is, in a way, above a dialogue that would have with the churches or just any other NGOs. He thanked the European Union for this, but what does this mean in practical terms? How is this dialogue going to take place?
Well, the Treaty of Lisbon, as you point out, has only recently come into force, and what he is referring to is Article 17. And it is for the European institutions to have a dialogue with the churches in Europe, with the faith groups, and it's part and parcel of this discussion around the role and place of religion in society. And it's interesting that when the Pope mentions the Treaty of Lisbon and this context in particular, he talks about the whole notion of having a positive laïcité, a positive secularism. He talks about the proper distinction between the realms of the temporal and the realms of the religion. And he talks about the need for a positive and an open secularity. Now, I imagine as the time will go on in the course of this year, we will see how that structure will come into being. But, for example, the President of the European Commission, President Barroso, has come here on a number of occasions, as have Presidents of the European Parliament. Now, that might have been more ad hoc. I imagine that what we will see now is some form of structured dialogue. But I think I would have to stress, as the ambassador of a member state, that this complements but does not replace each member state's proper relationship with the faith groups within their territory. And while it is a very, very positive development that Article 17 provides a particular framework, each of the member states has its own history when it comes to the role of religion in the society. And the state that I represent in England, and there is the Church of England, and that has a special position as a state church, of which the Queen is the supreme governor. In other parts of the United Kingdom, the relationship between religion and the state is slightly different. But each of those diversities, if one wants to say that, has its unique role. And this step in relation to the Treaty of Lisbon complements that, but it does not replace the individual national relationships that we each have with our religions.
On a less official level, the Pope also spoke about a painful rupture in that relationship on a social level. He mentioned that in a lot of Western countries, there's now a sort of anti-religious and anti-Christian attitude, especially amongst political and cultural circles, some people in the media. Is there a rising tide of anti-Christian secularism in Europe and in the West in general?
I can really only comment about the situation in the United Kingdom. And certainly my Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, could not be more clear about the role of religion in public life. And there are all shades of opinion in the Western world. And indeed, the proliferation of media outlets gives voice to people that perhaps weren't heard before. But I think if one looks back at the 18th and 19th century, nothing has changed dramatically in that regard. Perhaps these voices are heard more often than they once were. But I think if we were to look at some of the statistics about the relevance of religion in British life, for example, roughly 24% of British children go to faith-based schools, mostly Catholic and Anglican. In the last 6 years, British prime ministers have visited the Vatican 5 times. In the preceding 30 years, they visited once. So that for me would be just one small indication that actually religion has become more central rather than less central.
Another point the Pope brought up, which you had mentioned, was about arms control. He specifically spoke about nuclear non-proliferation. He also mentioned the trade of arms into conflict zones. Now, recently, your government has been pushing for a treaty on stopping the illicit trade in arms. What's the progress on that?
Well, the United Nations, we have over 100 countries on board to move forward towards an arms trade treaty. And that will take, you know, in the basis of experience from the past with cluster munitions and with landmines, that will take probably about 2 to 3 years. The Holy See is very firmly involved in that as the friends of the Arms Trade Treaty. And indeed, late last year, the British Foreign Secretary and his French opposite number, Bernard Kouchner, placed an article in L'Osservatore Romano in which they highlighted the forthcoming work on the Arms Trade Treaty and the role of the Holy See. Now, a lot of people would sit up and think, well, what has the Holy See got to do with the Arms Trade Treaty? Well, it's very interesting because it's the view of the Foreign Office that if it was not for the diplomatic work and the bridge-building work of the Holy See delegation in the preparatory conferences leading to the Cluster Munitions Treaty, we would not have achieved that necessary consensus. So we are looking again to the Holy See to provide that necessary bridge for the Arms Trade Treaty. But also the Pope mentioned the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And the review conference will take place in May of this year. And again, there is tremendous movement there, because up to now, talks around the Non-Proliferation Treaty tended to either divide between those who were interested in proliferation and those who were interested in disarmament. And actually, to look at the treaty, you realise that there are these two pillars. And when our Prime Minister spoke in September 2009 at the UN Security Council, he was very, very clear about the path and how this path could lead towards a world free of nuclear weapons. And that has to be a component of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, but so too does proliferation. And the United Kingdom and a number of other countries have really put a lot of effort into this to try to make sure that the NPT conference is a success in May 2010. And that's why we were greatly, you know, really very, very pleased to see that the Holy Father has referred to this and has really given it a big push, and that there is that degree of foresight in the Holy See's position.
Turning now to another conflict area. The Holy Father every year, of course, mentions the Middle East peace process. Britain has, of course, been a key backer in this area. Yet it's almost as if it's worse now than it has been in a while, at least on the political side of things, that the two sides don't seem to want to talk. Is there hope for Middle East peace in 2010?
I think there is hope for peace in 2010 in the Middle East. I think for two reasons. One, the Pope reminds us in this text about the need for a two-state solution, for the right of Israel to exist, and also for the right of a Palestinian homeland that is viable. He also raises the issue about the status of Jerusalem. Now, I think that is a useful reminder as to what the plan here is, should the will exist to achieve that. But there's also something else, because just before he comes to the Middle East peace process, he cites a number of examples where diplomacy has worked during the year. And all too often, you know, when you have addresses at the beginning of the new year, there can be a sort of a concentration on those things that haven't worked, as opposed to those that have worked. And the Pope cites a number of examples. He cites the 25th anniversary of the agreement between Chile and Argentina, which the Holy See brokered. He cites the now months of accord between and of agreement between Colombia and Ecuador that has reduced tension there. He cites the agreement during the year between Croatia and Slovenia on their sea border. And he cites the growing friendship between Armenia and Turkey, leading to the opening of diplomatic relations between those two countries. So it's very interesting just how this has been drafted, because here we have four positive examples of how diplomacy has worked. And then he raises the Middle East peace process, which seems to be around for an eternity. But actually, I think in the way that this has been drafted, there is also an illustration that actually diplomacy can work, and age-old conflicts can be brought to an end through genuine diplomatic effort.
Francis Campbell is Britain's ambassador to the Holy See. Altogether, a total of 178 countries enjoy diplomatic relations with the Holy See, and a number of those have seen direct benefits of Vatican diplomacy in times of national or regional conflict. Pablo Cabrera is Chile's ambassador to the Holy See.
He touched many subjects. He touched war, peace, poverty, hunger, religion, freedom, and at the same time, environment and discrimination. Laïcité positive. I think the Pope cover all across the spectrum of the international agenda, and he puts his own vision, which, by the way, has been recently expressed in a friendly and a very ethical way through the encyclical Caritas in Veritate. The Pope decided to recall as well that he has already expressed all those wishes through the context of encyclica Caritas in Veritate, the social context of the encyclica. And I think we have to take all those messages into account in order to have a better world, to have peace, security, and particularly to have solidarity, to work along all the international community, having in mind that solidarity is the main subject. It's not only to talk about upon. It's not only to talk about cooperation. We have to be engaged in a sort of train of development in which solidarity and in which the moral approach, in which the combat to poverty has to be a priority. And I think nowadays we need, we diplomats in particular, we need these sort of messages in order to create a new atmosphere of understanding, in order to not to arrive late to the problems. I think the Pope, in some extent, is a little bit further advanced, is trying to touch every subject without giving the recipe. The only recipe he has given to the international community is to think with that friendship, love, peace, justice, and solidarity under the key, the big key of ethical approach is a real, real priority for everybody to have a better world. That's why I think I am, in particular, personally, I am quite happy. And at the same time, as a Chilean representative, I am very recognized by the fact that the Pope touched in this important message what it has happened between Chile and Argentina as an expression of peace in which the Church and the Holy See contributed strongly and vividly to create this world of peace and security. That's why I am convinced that the vast majority of the international community will gather the spirit of this message, and every Minister of Foreign Affairs, every country, every government will put forward some initiative in order to tune up with the Pope ideas and the Pope agenda.
Thanks there to Pablo Cabrera, Chile's ambassador to the Holy See, commenting on Pope Benedict's address to diplomats on Monday.